Good morning, everyone. It is Monday morning, Parshas Pekudei, Tavshim Pei Dalet. I'd like to begin with commenting on the second Rashi, the Parsha. So this Parsha seems to be like a repetition. For the most part, we had Truma Tetzava, which is enumeration of all of the vessels of the Mishkan and all of the priestly vestments. This parsha is taking an account of everything that was done. Eilu Bikurei HaMishkan. This is an accounting of the Mishkan, Mishkan HaEdos, which is a Mishkan of testimony. Asher Pukad Al Pi Moshe, that was commanded by Moshe, Avodas HaLevi'im, was the work of the Levi'im, B'yad Yisomer ben Aaron HaKohen, the hands of Yisomer, the son of Aaron HaKohen. Now, Rashi says something here, because the Mishnah, and I'm sorry, the Pasuk, uses the word Mishkan twice. Eilu Bikurei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEdos. Rashi says, Shnei Pa'amim, the word Mishkan is used twice. It's a remez, it's an allusion to something that's going to happen in the future. Lemikdash, to the Holy Temple, the Beis HaMikdash, Shnis Mashchein, it was taken as a collateral, it means it was taken away from us. Bishnei Chuvanim, are the two destructions, Alav and Hasem Sheisal, because of the sins of Yisrael. In other words, the Mishkan was the precursor to the Beis HaMikdash, right? Okay, so the Mishkan functioned in the desert, and then functioned later on, and Shiloh, Nova Givon, etc. And then finally have the two temples that were destroyed. So the fact that it said Mishkan, Mishkan HaEdos, for some reason, it's an allusion to the destruction of the two Batei Mikdash. And the Gur Arye, the Maharal, asked the question, why is it the place of this, in this pasuk, when it's talking about the accounting of all the parts of the Mishkan, to allude to the fact that the Beis HaMikdash in the future will be destroyed? I apologize. Thank you. He says, why wasn't this mentioned earlier? So he says, Davar zeh mufla b'chachma. This is mufla. Mufla means wondrous, but in the language of the Maharal, the word mufla means mystical. Okay. He says, zeh yedua, it's known that the luchos, the tablets, were broken because they were given in public. When Moshe Rabbeinu broke the luchos, v'sholah ben ayin hara, and the ayin hara cast its, you know, the evil eye was cast on the luchos. So if something is done publicly, and there's a lot of attraction that's drawn to it, so it sets it up for a potential loss. That's called ayin hara. I know a lot of people don't want to do things in a public way. They shield their successes. You know, it even says in the Shulchan Aruch, in a less mystical way, it says you shouldn't stand and look at your friend's prosperous field. You have a field, and you have, you know, and your produce is growing, it's in full bloom, and I shouldn't go there just to stare at your field, because I can unwittingly and even unknowingly cast an evil spell. And that's, we find this, that Yosef HaTzadik, v'yidgu l'rov b'kerev ha'aretz, he blesses Ephraim and Manasseh, that they should be like fish, that fish are under the water, and so ayin hara doesn't, they're impervious to an ayin hara, the fish. So therefore, you know, there's something very real about it. Exactly how to understand it in our terms, that's not for this class. I once had Rabbi Nitzan once gave the girls at Beis Yaakov a class to understand on his level the concept of ayin hara. But the point is that this is a Medrash Tanchuma and Parshas Kisisa, that the luchos were broken because it was given in a public way. So he says, because it says Eilu Bikurei HaMishkan, these are the enumerations and the list, the numbers of the Mishkan, Shenimnu, everything was counted out now in very vivid detail in this parsha. And therefore, since it's counted out in a vivid detail, you're running the risk that you have an ayin hara that could find its way, that could cast its spell on the Mishkan. In this way, it could be destroyed because of that. Should kol davar, should nimna b'min, anything that's counted an ayin hara could find its way. And he cites a Rashi before a perek lamin, and therefore the ayin hara did find its way on the Mishkan and also on the Beis HaMikdash. Kol davar shehayu b'mikdash shehayu b'minyan, everything that was in the Beis HaMikdash is always also counted, as we have a pasuk in Divrei HaYomim. The Book of Chronicles lists everything that was in the Holy Temple. V'chol makom sheyesh minyan ayin hara sholeh. Okay, so therefore, the numbers here caused the ayin hara. And therefore, when you're talking about ayin hara, you're talking about destruction. And therefore, that's why at this point, Rashi finds it important to tell us that the two words Mishkan refers to the ultimate two based Batei Mikdash will be destroyed. Well, then there's an obvious question you can ask on this. If you're telling me that if you count something, it creates an ayin hara, so don't count it. Obvious question? So the Pirish here from Hartman, he asks this question, and he says he heard the answer from a Chacham Echad. Now, I heard from Rabbi Hartman, who's a good friend of mine. We were speaking on the phone last week. He heard this. He asked this question himself to Rav Moshe Shapiro. That's all. And in the footnote, he just writes Chacham Echad, but this is Rav Moshe Shapiro. And he said that when he asked Rav Moshe Shapiro this question, Rav Moshe Shapiro answers to him, he says, Tehiye Bari, means be well. That's another way of saying Zayk is, in other words, not a good question. He said, well, what's the answer? So this is the way he wanted to answer this, and it really gives us a perspective on the Mishkan. We tend to think that the Mishkan was built, we built the house for the Lord, right? We built the house for the Rabbanu Shalom, and it's Hashem's house, right? He says, it's really not that way. It's really a house of equal partnership between Klal Yisrael and Hashem. Now, we built the materials, we put everything together. He says, but this now is an abode for Hashem, where we come, right? And it's a 50-50 partnership. It's a place where we enter and we meet the Rabbanu Shel Olam. And in his language, he says, the cheftz of the Mishkan, the entity of the Mishkan, only could take effect when Yisrael has a certain grasp on it. Our grasp on it, he says, very much it's like the home. Husband and wife, they live together in an intimate way. They share a home. Well, they both have to know what that home is all about. It's not the man's house that the woman comes into. It's not the woman's house that the man comes into. But it's an equal partnership. And they both have to take stock of the components of the home. Now, of course, when I'm talking about a physical home, you know, we're talking about the physicality of the home. You're talking about the living room, the dining room, the bedrooms, whatever the case may be. But by the Mishkan, it's not the physicality of the Mishkan. All of the vessels are not just physical vessels. Each one of them is a conduit for a certain spiritual energy that comes into the Mishkan. The Aron, the Holy Ark, and the Menorah brings in the light of Torah, and the Shulchan, the table, brings in the energy of a parnasa, of sustenance for Klal Yisrael, you understand, and the Mizbeach is for service, and all of the vessels, they represent something. In order for us to feel that that's our home, it's not just God's home, but it's our home, we have to have an accounting of everything that's in there, because you can't adequately be a partner to this enterprise of coming together and a 50-50 partnership with Hashem unless you're totally invested in what that house represents. So if there would not be an accounting, so there, our achiza, our foothold is a better word for it, our grasp, our foothold in the Mishkan would be lacking. Does that make sense? In other words, we have to fully embrace it because we have to know what's there, what the potentials are, what's happening in that house, right? If it would only be that we're preparing a house for Hashem, then, like, okay, so if we don't know everything in the house, okay. But that's not the case. And Mamela, he says, that is of dire importance for us to have that achiza, that grasp in the house, and therefore there's no way other than to count things. So the overarching need is to be familiar with, be part of, and to be, you know, a chelak, just to be a member of every single vessel that's there, every single vessel. There's a lot of vessels in the Mishkan. There's not only the ones that I mentioned, but all the various vessels and the small ones and the pots and the bowls and the plates and everything there, right? So we have to be invested in that enterprise. Otherwise, we're lacking in our partnership with Hashem. And therefore, the intimacy of our relationship would somehow be lacking. So now we know what that house is all about. And therefore, it's almost as if, yes, we need to know what's in there. Will it open it up to an ayin hara? It may. But let the chips fall where they may. Sometimes there's a necessary, I'm not going to say necessary evil, but sometimes something is very necessary because if you don't have it, then you're lacking in the very underpinnings of it. So we have to be invested, excuse me, in the Mishkan. Okay, so that explains the concept of why everything is counted, although there could be an ayin hara. But because there is an ayin hara, right, therefore it is given to ultimate destruction. Now, I'm going to say something here that a number of you I know have heard from me over the years because I typically say this in my remarks on Tisha B'Av. Rashi uses a very strange language. Rashi says that both the first and second Beis HaMikdash, we say that they were destroyed, right? The language that Rashi uses is shenis mashchan, that they were taken as a collateral. Now, the word collateral is strange. I mean, in other words, Nebuchadnezzar, he destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash, and the Romans destroyed the second Beis HaMikdash. They didn't take it. They didn't pick it up, put it on the back of a truck, and take it to Babylon. In other words, it was destroyed. So why is the word shenis mashchen used here? So I've been saying this for years, and just now, just a couple of days ago, I found that the kernel of my vart is in the Malbim, but it's not in here. It's in the Sefer Eretz Chemda. The Malbim wrote a Sefer Eretz Chemda, and he doesn't make a big fanfare about it, but he does say this, and I'm going to share it with you. So before it was my own, and now I see, Baruch Hashem, that it's that the Malbim says it. So this is how it goes. You know, there's a kapitel in Tehillim, Mizmor LaAsav, a song to Asav, and it talks about what would be the churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the prophetic Mizmor. And the Gemara asks a question, why are you saying Mizmor LaAsav, a song to Asav? It should say it's a dirge. You're talking, Mizmor is a happy song, and Akina is a dirge. It should be more of a dirge, Akina, lamentation. So the Gemara tells us, Chazal say, that Hashem was so angry with Klal Yisrael, he wanted to destroy the Jewish people. But rather than destroy the Jewish people, he took his wrath out on the sticks and stones, on the mortar, on the building material of the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, it really was supposed to be us. But rather than destroy us, Hashem had mercy, and he says, okay, you'll stay alive, but I'm going to take away your Beis HaMikdash. Now it happened. This is that Gemara that I just shared with you, that Hashem took out his wrath on the building materials, in other words, on the Beis HaMikdash itself. That is what the Malbim does say. Now, let me just elaborate just a little bit more. It comes out like this, that it wasn't just Hashem decided to destroy the Beis HaMikdash rather than destroy the Jewish people. Really, we would have deserved to be annihilated. But for the fact that Hashem found a substitute, and that substitute is called the Beis HaMikdash. But it's not that Hashem just destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. He took it as collateral. What's collateral? You go into a loan office, right? You borrow $1,000 and you're going to give your gold watch, right? You go to a pawn shop, okay? Now, what happens is when you finally can pay back the $1,000, you're going to give the $1,000 back and you're going to get your watch back. So how is this a collateral? So the thing is, we need to deserve to be independently worthy of existing. We have to be free of sin to the point that we are not here on credit anymore, right? So I will use I will use the Lashon, we're here on loan from God, right? Didn't Rush Limbaugh used to say that? Something on loan from, we are here on loan from God, meaning to say, we don't have our own schuskiyim, we don't have our own right to exist, but for the fact that there was credit that was extended. This credit has gone on for almost 2,000 years. Hashem is waiting for the day that we will be able to pay back, give the $1,000 back, and he'll give us the watch back. We will be worthy of our independent existence, and then he will return the Beis HaMikdash. You see, it's a beautiful way of thinking about it. That's why Rashi says that the destruction of the holy temples was not a destruction. It was a taking of a collateral. Well, it was physically destroyed because that's how Hashem took the collateral. But he will return that. It will be a different physical Beis HaMikdash. But we're really not talking about the physicality of the temple. We're talking about the spiritual aspect of the Beis HaMikdash, what happens in the Beis HaMikdash. And that's why it's called a mashkat. In other words, we are here, not in our own, with our own zuchus right now. We need to be zochet to redeem ourselves. And I'd like to say one other thing. This the Malbim doesn't say. It says the mikdash, the temple that was taking collateral with the two destructions. Now, again, shnei pa'amim. The word mishkan appears twice. It's a remez to the mikdash that was taken twice as ransom. Why doesn't he just say it was a remez to two batei mikdash that were taken ransom? It's a funny language. It was a remez to the mikdash in the singular that was taken twice. It should say two batei mikdash, right? I think really what's happening here is if you're talking about a physical building, it's true, you would say twice. There are no two. There's one mikdash. Mikdash means it's the entity of Hashem Shechina. Sometimes it's in the guise of a Mishkan. Sometimes it's in the guise of the first Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes it's in the guise of the second Beis HaMikdash. It's only a physical aspect. But what really is, the Ribbono Shel Olam took the collateral by taking back his Shechina from us in its physical manifestation. He did that two times. He did that with the first Beis HaMikdash. He did that with the second Beis HaMikdash. There are no two batei mikdash. Yes, there's two physical Beis HaMikdash, but what it presents is the reality of Hashem's Shechina, his honor, his glory, that he took from us twice as collateral. He did that collateral. And as after the first time, apparently we redeemed ourselves, however that worked. We got his Shechina back, and then he took it back again. So therefore, it's called Shechina Smashke, and it was taken twice. And that, I think, answers these two diyukim I have in Rashi, why it's called a mashka, why it's called a collateral, and why it's called he did it two times. Thank you for coming. Good chodesh.